Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I want to tell you why I love focus groups.
Yeah.
Because in a poll, you cannot hear voters do these dejected sighs.
Yeah.
The like, I mean, Ossoff is just going to like. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And this week we are going to Georgia, which has a bunch of fun and interesting primaries coming up on Tuesday, May 19th, which is very soon. Now, look, I say fun and interesting, but I think this episode is going to be a really funny window into the disconnect between the kinds of like political nerds who listen to this show and how regular voters process these kinds of elections, because there's like a really crowded Republican primary for U.S. Senate there in Georgia and crowded primary fields for governor in both parties. It's a political nerd's dream, but the focus groups made it clear that these primaries felt like a root canal for Republicans and Democrats alike. Because if you think America as a whole is worn out on politics, man, Georgians are doubly worn out. The exception is my guest today. He's one of the most plugged in reporters in Georgia, Greg Bluestein, co-host of the Politically Georgia podcast and author of Flipped: How Georgia Turned Purple and Broke the Monopoly on Republican Power. Greg, thanks for coming back and doing this again.
I'm honored to be with you.
I was telling Greg, I was like, you got a face for podcasts, man. This guy's a scribbler. Look at this. Look how handsome. All right. Before we get into the show, and I tease Greg more, go get your tickets to the Bulwark's live shows next week in San Diego on May 20th and Los Angeles on May 21st. I'm going to be there with Tim Miller, Sam Stein. Go to thebulwark.com/events and come hang out with us.
I want to come.
Come. You should fly out. It'll be a good time. I guarantee it. So I want to talk about Georgia's new status as a swing state, because it's making Georgia very interesting. You're like the guy, the person who knows the most about Georgia politics at a time when Georgia is one of the most important political states. And so how has Georgia's status as a swing state affected the political culture? Are people's brains just like fried by the constant political advertising?
Yes. We were used to being ignored, right? We're used to a lot of these races being over in the primaries for decades, really. And the last, I don't know, 8 years, kind of coinciding with Donald Trump's rise, maybe 2016 and on, Georgia has become this competitive battleground, right? I view it as the premier battleground state in the nation, and Republicans and Democrats think that that status is not going away. They differ on how competitive it is, right? Republicans still say it's a red state. Democrats are like, it might not be purple, periwinkle, crimson, you know, shades of purple. But I think the biggest factor other than Donald Trump, you can track the suburbs of Metro Atlanta going from Republican bastions to Democratic strongholds from 2016 to right now, right? And now they're the cornerstone of the Democratic coalition in Georgia. There's these folks, we call them the deciding factor, the deciders in Georgia. There's the few hundred thousand, maybe 300,000 or 400,000 voters who split their tickets, who in 2022 voted for both Brian Kemp, the Republican governor, and Raphael Warnock, the Democratic U.S. senator. But in some elections, they go all Republican, and some they're more willing to go and vote for more Democrats. And they're going to help decide this election, too.
When you talk about politics publicly all the time, you put yourself in a position to be yelled at by a lot of people who do not like it, who they think your analysis is incorrect. And one of the things people do not like to hear is, one, that swing voters exist. Like, for some reason, people sort of object to the idea that swing voters are really a thing. I, of course, believe that they are, especially in very specific places. Georgia being like swing voters in a swing state like Georgia, are some of the most critical people, and so I endeavor to understand them. But there's also this sense, and so people don't like to believe that they're split ticket voters, which of course there are. Georgia is a place where they're really important. But there's also this debate about whether the Democratic Party, in order to win more voters, needs to be more moderate or more progressive. And I kind of hate that argument because it often flattens the conversation that is very distinct in different places. So in a place like Georgia, how do you think about swing voters and the kind of candidates that attract these swing voters? Like, what do you need to be like in Georgia to win over those complicated swingier people?
Yeah, well, I can attest there, those swing voters do exist, and they're all over Georgia, but they're really all over like the metro Atlanta suburbs. And that's the reason why you have a Governor Kemp right now and a Senator Warnock, right? Without those swing voters, there wouldn't be either of those politicians, or at least one of those politicians wouldn't be in office. But that debate has been raging in the Democratic Party for a long time, because when Democrats held power in Georgia, and they did it up until the early 2000s, they were very conservative for the most part. There were some liberal Democrats, but you know, there's this unique coalition of white, more conservative rural Democrats and black voters who tended to be a little bit more liberal, but you know, more moderate over the years. And sometimes you'd have a more liberal candidate kind of shake things up, but the races ended in the primaries. And we had name brand candidates running for governor as Democrats, running as NRA Democrats, running as, you know, focusing on middle of the road issues like education funding and, you know, important issues, but not focusing on some of the issues that are now like in the fabric of Democratic politics. And I think that started really changing back in 2018 when Stacey Abrams ran for governor here and said, look, Democrats shouldn't run as Democrat lights. You should embrace those issues, right? Talk about limiting gun expansions. Talk about abortion rights. Talk about LGBTQ rights. These are all normal things now for Democrats to talk about. But in Georgia, they really kind of weren't, at least for statewide candidates up until her candidacy. And so I think she helps show that there is a path, although she, of course, did not win. But she came within a point and a half. But again, that election 2018, the real takeaway beyond that was that Democrats started making these giant inroads in the Atlanta suburbs. And while she lost, Lucy McBath is a congresswoman from the North Atlanta suburbs. She won. She flipped the same suburban district where I actually live that John Ossoff had lost in the special election just a few months before. So start carving out that path. And then, of course, in 2020 and 2021, Senators Warnock, Ossoff win those epic runoffs. Joe Biden captures Georgia for the first time since 92 by even building a further lane with those independents minded swing voters.
Well, look, we've got a jam-packed show here, so we're going to get into it just because of all the races I alluded to at the top. And even if you're not following Georgia politics super closely, I still think you're going to love this episode because there are a lot of races, a bunch of things that matter that maybe you're not paying attention to, but people should be because they are going to matter. There's a lot of stuff, though, that to me is a signal about politics in general that I think are worth turning over. So let's start with the U.S. Senate race. And I got to tell you, I wasn't following this super closely on the Republican side. I will admit to a little bit of Ossoff curiosity, but I just hadn't been following the Republican side, which is a different world for me these days. But okay, so you've got Derek Dooley, the former University of Tennessee head football coach. Just we love our football coaches in the Republican Party these days. And two congressmen, Mike Collins and Buddy Carter. Okay, so most of the polling has shown Mike Collins in the lead, but he's likely to end up in a runoff with either Carter or Dooley. Does that sound right?
Yep.
Well, the voters in our focus groups did not seem particularly jazzed about their choices or about the Republicans' chances against John Ossoff. Let's listen.
I haven't done enough research on him, but just like Ossoff's just got to go. I mean, my wife's Jewish and she doesn't even like him.
I definitely want to do more homework on Mike Collins and Buddy Carter. I do find with Derek Dooley, the first thing I thought was, are we really going with a UGA person again? I know they already tried that with Herschel Walker.
Not going to work.
You know, they're really believing that this football stuff is going to sway people.
I don't know enough about any of them, but I do know about that Ossoff dude, and yeah, I don't want to vote for him.
You know why I'd vote for Buddy Carter? Because he looks like Pat Sajak.
It's a sorry state of affairs when we feel when basically Ossoff is solidly in control and we can't muster a candidate. I think of the three, the folks have talked about the two congressmen are not shining lights. And so the choice is the two congressmen who aren't shining lights or a total outsider who, despite Kemp going with him all over the place, doesn't seem to have rallied much support or any public presence. From my understanding, basically, Collins is a crook. So that's in my circle of people that he's perceived as the ethics violation that he's being charged with around, I guess, using campaign money for personal gain and thing. He's refused to respond to the congressional investigators. And so he's got a stench around him that's not going to help him be elected. And I think Buddy Carter is an okay guy, but these are two insider Congress guys. And so two insider, not particularly well-known Congress guys versus Ossoff with a huge war chest, recognition and good constituent services. That's a long shot. So that's why by process of elimination, I find myself saying, what the heck, Hail Mary, you know, get the outsider guy. And, you know, maybe that would at least change the dynamics of the office or the dynamics of the election.
All right, Greg, I want to tell you why I love focus groups.
Yeah.
Because in a poll, you cannot hear voters do these dejected sighs.
Yeah.
The like, I mean, Ossoff is just going to like, I mean, I was genuinely a little surprised listening to this one. And this is why, just for the listeners, why I think this is a really important episode, because it goes to the psychology of how Republicans are feeling.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now, this is specific to these races where they don't love any of these candidates, but I also think it's just part, and also they're like, I hate Ossoff, but also he's kind of good at this. And yeah, like people seem to like him. So are people in the state, like are Republicans just kind of giving up on this one? What's the vibe there?
I mean, they're not giving up, but you can hear there's that fatalism in their voices, like, oh, this is doomed. And they're also resounding opposition to Ossoff, right? I mean, that came through too. Even the folks who, you know, complimented him for connecting with voters and finding ways to, you know, stay on message and all the many kudos that go Ossoff's way, from those folks, they're, you know, they want him out of office, but they're worried about their chances. And partly it's because of the field, right? If Governor Kemp was in this race, I bet that focus group would sound very different. But he decided not to run, and he was sort of the consensus Republican candidate who Trump was going to get behind, and the party power brokers are going to get behind, and the Senate leaders of Washington were going to get behind. And then out of all things, not only did he not run, but then he recruited someone who was not on anyone's list, Derek Dooley. You know, he's a famous name in Georgia, Dooley, because his dad was the UGA football coach. He's from Athens. He actually grew up with the governor in Athens, Georgia. But he's not remotely someone who was seen as a potential candidate. And he's come into his own in the last year. He's been on the campaign trail nonstop, and he's learned a lot about being a candidate. But you can tell from those voters that most of them are still undecided. Our poll just a few weeks ago showed that more than half of likely Republican voters are undecided in the Senate race. So you can definitely sense that in those comments. And they don't feel like there is this great alternative to Ossoff, you know, a Kemp-like alternative, or even like a second-tier Kemp-like alternative. Mike Collins is the front runner, but there are deep worries, and you can hear it from folks who worry that he'll be clobbered among those swing voters, among those suburbanites. You know, he's like a MAGA warrior, tough talking, brash, you know, provocative. He's all over Twitter with all these incendiary statements over his congressional career. but is that going to play well in Sandy Springs, Georgia, right? These formerly Republican bastions that have now gone blue, where Republicans are going to need to make inroads. And that's the concern right now.
Wait, you just said something, though, that caught my attention. Would Trump have endorsed Kemp if Kemp ran? Because that is because he endorsed Perdue, like his opposition last time, and he hates Kemp. I don't know if he hates Kemp, but that they have famously feuded because Kemp has been one of the few Republicans to not totally bend the knee in the way so many other people have.
Yeah, and their feud goes even before that 2020 election. There was stuff about whether he read Trump in over Senator Kelly Loeffler's appointment, all these other things during the pandemic. But, you know, things have settled down. There was a flame up on 2024 at the campaign trail, like near the end of the campaign. And then kind of both sides got together and said, let's call a truce. And that truce up until this taping, as far as I know, has lasted. The governor told me just a few days ago that he talks to President Trump fairly regularly. They've stayed on good accord. And I think the White House would have gotten behind Kemp had he decided to run.
Why didn't he run?
He didn't want to. I mean, I think it boils down to that. He's been in public office now, 8 years as governor, years before that as Secretary of State. Before that, he was a state senator. He's done this for a while. And I think there's a part of him who thinks he could run in 2028 for U.S. Senate against Warnock. There's a part of him who might want to explore a presidential run if this was a different mood of a Republican Party. But I think there's also a part of him who wants to go back to Athens and do something else.
I'd be interested to see how a Kemp would play to a national audience in a post-Trump world. That's like an interesting experiment. I would love to kick the tires on just out of interest. Okay, you told us who you think is the strongest candidate there. Who did you say? Collins?
Well, Collins is the front runner, but Collins also comes with all those setbacks. It'll be interesting to see how he tries to message to those swing voters that don't really matter as much in a Republican primary, but certainly matter in a general.
So let's shift to the governor's race. I'm going to break down the key players in a moment. But first, I just want to take a listen to how worn out these Republicans also were about this race and how much trouble they were having making up their minds. Let's listen.
If anyone that's running right now is already in any type of, you know, position, you know, Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor, whatever, you know, you can look back and see, okay, what have they done being there? And then look at the other ones that aren't in any type of government position. And then the biggest thing is, I don't listen to commercials. Because they're just going to dog each other out. I mean, if you go by commercials, we ain't going to pick anybody.
I'm undecided as well, but I don't pay attention to the ads, and I certainly every piece of mail that I get goes in the garbage.
I think I know who I'm going to vote for, and I'm sure this is the guy I'm going to vote for. And then 2 days later, I think, I can't vote for him based on what this guy and this guy and this guy is saying about him, which totally makes me start thinking, are those things true? I think he really does believe this, this, and this. You know, it's all the social media stuff that just pushes you over the edge, and you want to really believe things about one candidate that's going to really do things about your state taxes. But then someone else tells you, no, that isn't true. That isn't what he's going to do with your state taxes. And I honestly just, I don't know who to believe anymore. One guy promises one thing and then the next guy comes up with a commercial that says he told you this, but then like, no, here's he's taking all your money and says he's doing these things, but then he's done the government says he's been stealing your money and taking this. And I'm like, do I trust you or don't I trust you? I don't know who to believe anymore, to be honest with you.
It just seems like everything is focused on what the other person's done wrong and not so much about what they're going to do for us. I'm just so tired of, I wish they would actually stop talking about the other guy and talk about yourself and what you are going to do, because dogging the other person, I find it just so annoying that that's what we end up getting for months and months on end through political ads. It's just really frustrating. I much prefer the ones where they say, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm going to do this, you know, but we haven't had a lot of that in our Republican candidates, you know, for governor, or the two main ones anyway.
But I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one that is undecided. It is tough. I don't like voting for incumbents usually, because I feel like I don't like politicians that make it a career type thing.
I've not seen hardly any ads explaining or making the pitch why I should vote for one person or another. I've pretty much only seen ads for why someone says I shouldn't vote for somebody else. Although I will say, I absolutely am not voting for Raffensperger. Never in a million years. The way he was handling the state election with, I think, the 2020 race. Because at that point it was, there's nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here. Everything's fine. We did everything okay, yada, yada, yada. And then we come and find out, no, there was a ton of fraud in Fulton County. There was a bunch of stuff going on that was under his purview that somehow he didn't find after several years, but a new government can come in and find it in 6 months. So to me, that either says he's incompetent, he's negligent, or he just doesn't know what he's doing.
Ripping on my boy, Brad Raffensperger, my guy. I know and like Brad Raffensperger quite a bit. Nice guy, but he might not be right for this Georgia moment. There was interesting to me as I was listening to the voters talk about Fulton County, because I see this, there's a lot of places where I just did Louisiana. And so, you know, Cassidy's vote to impeach Trump is really dogging him. It's probably the reason he's not going to make the runoff, just like Brad Raffensperger is not going to make the runoff in Georgia. And they're just like, they hate these people who did anything to stand up to Trump. But I was interested in this idea that, you know, they sent Tulsi Gabbard down there into Fulton County. Did voters in Georgia, do they think now that because Tulsi Gabbard went down there and grabbed all the boxes out of Fulton County, that is proof that something untoward happened in the election, that it's been proven somehow?
Well, it's sort of this mirror image thing going on in Georgia, because Democrats are saying, oh my God, they're trying to federalize our elections. They're obsessed with 2020, which to a degree is still true, right? 2020 is still sort of shadowing everything that's happening in Georgia in 2026. And Republicans, you know, they're more split, but there's certainly a big, giant MAGA core of Republicans who do think something went wrong in 2020, even though there's no evidence that anything that would have actually affected the election outcome went wrong. And so there are some who, we call them never Raffensperger voters, and there's it's hard to poll exactly how many, but there's a lot of Republicans who would never, ever, as we heard from one of those panelists, who would never, ever vote for Raffensperger in any circumstances. But obviously he still won his 2022 reelection bid. So there's a sizable group of Republicans who would. And yeah, he had the power of incumbency at his back, and Trump wasn't as popular in Georgia then as he is, at least with Republicans, as he is now. So there's that element too, but he's trailing in third place, by double digits in the latest AJC poll. So he has a long way to go if he's to make this runoff.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Yeah, there's another guy, the Attorney General Chris Carr, who's also looks like he might not make the runoff, which is interesting. All right, so there are two main contenders then that I want to talk about. Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones, who was the fake elector when Trump was trying to overturn Georgia's election results in 2020. He now, relatedly, has Trump's endorsement. Jones was looking like the obvious frontrunner until this past February, when a billionaire healthcare executive named Rick Jackson jumped into the race. There weren't many strongly held opinions in these Republican groups about either of these guys, but I do think they were kind of Jackson curious. Let's listen.
He hasn't already been bought. Once he gets in office, that'll happen. But as it is now, he's going to go in guns blazing to try to get something done until the swamp absorbs him and turns him into everyone else. As much as a lot of people hated Kemp after the 2020 election, he stood his ground. He did his thing. He made the state a hell of a lot better than it was before he got here. I don't think he got corrupted as much, but I think by being an outsider, you don't see how it really works. You get in there, but you're going to go in fighting like Trump does every single day, and everyone's going to hate you, but you've got to try to do something different than what's been going on.
There's no one that really is standing out to me other than obviously Jackson and Jones. You know, they obviously have the biggest budgets for advertising and things like that. But really two key issues that I'm hearing, the elimination of the state income tax and reduction of property taxes. And I think a few candidates, you know, are kind of emphasizing that message a lot more. To me, those are very important.
I had my candidate picked until he came on the scene. And so now I'm kind of going back and forth. I think he says some things very harshly, but I'm going to say that are very directly. But I'm going to say I don't disagree with a lot of it. And so, like I said, I had my candidate picked until he came on the scene. And now I'm debating between two.
Here's a guy that he's pretty much rags to riches type dude. So, yeah, does he look and sound weird, like kind of shady? Most of them do, you know, but it's somebody that, you know, has went from nothing to something and built it up, you know. So, I mean, he knows tough times. So that's, you know, not bad worth giving him a shot or digging in deeper to see more, learn more about him, you know, see what he's about, you know.
So tell me about Rick Jackson. Because these voters, he's like a billionaire, so I thought they'd like really hate him. So they were like sort of interested, though. What do you make of it?
Yeah, and I like what you said about Jackson curious voters, because I mean, to say that he upended the Georgia Republican race for governor is like an understatement. I mean, he just completely, unbelievably overhauled it, right, with his surprise entrance. And I think he got in back in February because Burt Jones, the front runner, the Trump endorsed lieutenant governor, hadn't really walled him off, right? He was 25-22% in a lot of polls, well ahead of his rivals, but still like 60%, 70% of undecided voters. He hadn't like sealed the deal. So Rick Jackson's on opening. He's been around Georgia politics for a long time, but really in the background. He's been the sort of insider mover and shaker and very involved in healthcare and foster care initiatives and things like that. But never as a candidate and a billionaire, right? He has a giant campus up in the North Atlanta suburbs. He has this huge house up in the North Atlanta suburbs. And when he got in, it suddenly was this moment where a lot of people who are sort of on that fence were like, okay, I have an alternative to Burt Jones, who's also very MAGA-y. Rick Jackson promises to be Trump's favorite governor. You know, and you also have an alternative to the other guys who aren't as pro or aren't seen as that much of a MAGA force, but who could be like Trump, but also, you know, pursue more mainstream Republican policies as well. So what also helped was that Rick Jackson has already spent more than $80 million of his own money on this race. And that's just what we know of. More than $100 million has been spent just on ads alone from all these candidates. And Rick Jackson makes up the biggest portion of it. So you can't turn on a screen in Georgia right now without seeing, some, even if you don't listen to the ads, they're going to like osmosis. They're going to permeate you no matter what. And they're all over the place. There are a lot of positive spots. This is what Rick Jackson would do. There's a lot of negative spots too, attacking Burt Jones, a few out there attacking Brad Raffensperger, but most of it has been Jones on Jackson violence, right? Just mudslinging, negative back and forths. Mostly they back the same policies, but they have very, very different approaches and very, very different styles. And if you're Burt Jones, you thought you had this kind of in the bag, might have gone to a runoff against Raffensperger, but you're pretty confident that Trump would come in at the end and help you out and get you over the fence. And now Trump's still backing Burt Jones. And Trump is still, you know, he held a tele-town hall kind of forum just the other day. But Rick Jackson's looking to sort of neutralize that, saying, look, he might be backing Burt Jones, but I will be the guy. I will actually get this stuff done.
Before we talk about Burt Jones, I do want to just, it is all over these focus groups, how many ads they have to see.
Yeah.
I do feel sort of sorry for them. And there's a couple of things I think when I hear voters talk about ads. One is they all lament the negative advertising. And yet candidates never stop doing it because it does make a big difference, the negatively defining your opponent. I just like the extent, though, to which they're like, I don't know what to think. These guys keep saying, you know, this one's bad, this one's bad. What are the issues that are actually motivating Georgians right now? What do people care about? What are they looking for in a candidate?
Yeah, well, Republicans think one of the issues, because they're all backing it, is cutting more taxes, right? Cutting the income tax, finding some way to bring down local property taxes as well. Most of them are saying nice things. I think all of them are kind of saying nice things about Governor Kemp and his leadership style, not the part about Trump in 2020 and all that, but more about, you know, the steady conservative hand. Kemp was the first lifelong Republican governor in Georgia history, right? The other two Republican governors switched parties and, you know, pursued gun expansions and abortion limits and all that. So they're all backing those. And then of course they're all talking about bringing affordability. They all seized on the affordability issues that Democrats are also talking about. They just have very different paths towards that affordability. You know, Republican path is cutting taxes.
It really did jump out at me listening to these groups. There's not a single group that I do right now that doesn't start out with, when we just say, how do you think things are going in the country? Everyone's like, bad. Everything's too expensive. I can't afford this. I can't afford that. These are the trade-offs I'm making. I'm sort of desperate for politicians to start listening to more voters regularly, because I just don't think people realize how bad it is out here for people, and how much in every single group, Republican or Democrat, they talk about the actual trade-offs, the price of gas, whatever. That being said, you know, they had really different ideas about what they want, what should be done to solve it. And they really were returning to these just like very tried and true. We need to cut taxes. We need to cut taxes, which I got to say, even in the Republican groups in some other states that are less, Georgia reminds me, those Republicans sound like Republicans of old in ways that a lot of other MAGA Republican groups don't, because they're more populist in a lot of these other places. They think that cutting taxes is for the elite and for the wealthy, and like what they want is for Trump to just give them more stuff. And so it was interesting to hear how much they were just kind of going to the well on cutting taxes. But maybe Georgia's the last place where like the old school Republicans still kind of the actual, I don't even want to call them ideas, but you know, they still believe in that old rock conservative stuff.
Yeah, the last bastion of old guard Republicanism. I think there are a lot of Republicans here who like that sort of title. Although, you know, there's plenty of Republicans who just want to be talking about election integrity right now, too. And there's about to be a special session in Georgia that will tackle not only redistricting, but also voting process. And so there's lots of Republicans who want lawmakers to go even further and to move towards paper ballots and a lot of the things that we heard in Georgia after the 2020 election. So there's a stew of issues. But yeah, one of the main ones is income tax cuts. And Burt Jones promises to completely eliminate Georgia's income tax. You know, over is going to take a while, but over until 2032, which is more than $13-14 billion of revenue. Rick Jackson promises to also slash it, but maybe not completely eliminate it. And we're seeing the real world repercussions of that. Just the other day, Governor Kemp took out $300 million of spending from Georgia's budget, because you can't shave the income tax and also keep up all the spending without dipping deep into Georgia's surplus. So there's that sort of reality, the cold, hard reality meets all these promises. But right now, that is where Republicans are going for the most part. There's lots of other policies. And you still hear culture war stuff. They're still railing against DEI. And there's some down ticket races where like Sharia law has become an issue. And we haven't really heard about that in Georgia since after 9/11, right? That's 20 years
old. Oh my God. It's all over the Texas stuff and in California. Like there is tons of this Sharia law stuff that's coming back up. I guess I know why, but it does feel weird and almost anachronistic and like not of the moment, but somehow Republicans are definitely running on it.
I heard from a Democrat yesterday saying, what's next, the flag? Like the Georgia flag was the biggest issue in the world in the early 2000s, but it's been a settled issue now. And you know, there's even worries that could come back. But I think one of the reasons you're not hearing as much about culture wars in Georgia is because a lot of those boxes have been checked. They've already passed transgender restrictions and sports bans and a bill we call religious liberty that was a favorite of the sort of evangelical right. Lots of gun expansions and there was abortion limits. So like a lot of those issues have been taken care of under Kemp's administration, to the delight of Republicans and the disappointment of Democrats. Now you're getting into new fronts. Whenever they're talking about DEI bans and things like that that might not have been completely addressed by the governor that they're looking to address in the future.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's tough when they've taken all those off the table. Republicans start to not, they're out of ideas. Not a lot left to do.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay, let's talk about Burt Jones. Let's play the sound for Burt Jones and I'll get your take on him on the other side.
Trump's not stupid. He's a smart man. So if he's endorsed Burt, he has his reasons. I don't necessarily know what they are. I've seen the ads where he goes through a couple of bullet points that don't necessarily say a whole lot. But I think to Cliff's point with what happened in Indiana, you know, that I think alone is going to build some momentum where Trump chosen candidates are going to have better odds now than they did 3 days ago because of what happened in Indiana. I think that's going to continue. So I think that's going to give Burt a leg up.
I don't know if he was endorsed before Jackson and if it would have been any different, you know, if that's all I'm just curious. I do like the endorsement. You know, for the most part, if Trump's going to endorse somebody and it's going to piss the Democrats off, so I'm going to vote for him. So, yeah, I don't know, because I think that it was vote before he came in, so I don't know how much that means.
My problem with Jones is, okay, so, you know, his family's the gas stations, right? So they're going to want the tax, the gas tax. They're going to want the higher price gas. They're going to want all that. So I don't see him fighting to lower the prices because then they're not going to make as much money. I don't think him coming in is going to be that person to make something happen. He's not going to ruffle the feathers in the General Assembly. He's not going to, you know, stir things up, get things motivated, get things advancing. You know, we're going to stay in the same, you know, pattern we're in. And I mean, Georgia's got a lot of growth in it, and it's got, you know, yeah, we have a lot growing here. I live in Gwinnett County, so I mean, we have many people here as it is. Which kind of sucks, but whatever. You know, I mean, I don't see him being that fire.
He's probably my second choice behind Jackson.
For the Democrats, they're going to paint him to be more of the, you know, the MAGA conservative crazy, you know, easier to beat. I feel like he's not as palatable to independents, maybe. Conservatives, you know, Trump supporters are going to love him. They're going to vote for him. I don't feel like he's as going to be as popular with the independents, or I think we really need independents to come over and vote, you know, conservative and vote with Republicans.
He runs a humane society where they save hundreds and hundreds of animals. And I just admire that. And I was at an event for that when I met them. And so I was very positive for that.
Burt Jones, to me, as a bulldog, you know, and a bulldog fan, he's one of the first ones I'm going to look into because I don't know anything about him. I've seen his ads. He's not doing negative ads that I've seen. You know, it's more about him being a family man and a fighter and blah, 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 whatever. It's too general to really tell you anything, but I do want to look into him.
What are these two guys attacking? It sounds like they're, even though that guy said I've seen a lot of positive ads, that was not the consensus of the group. It sounds like they're attacking each other quite a bit. What feels like it's going to decide this, and what are the issues that they're attacking each other on that are breaking through or not breaking through?
It's a stew. But there's a lot of issues. Burt Jones is attacking Rick Jackson, saying that, you know, his company harbored illegal immigrants, and that he basically, really the underlying thing is that the guy's a phony. Burt Jones wants to paint Rick Jackson as this never Trumper who just came on the Trump bandwagon more recently, and now he's trying to be the Trump warrior, and he's really not. That's Burt Jones's argument. And there's, look, you can look back, you can look at some of his donations to anti-Trump figures in the Republican Party over the past decade. also, you know, he donated $1 million to Trump, but it wasn't until December of last year, right, as he was presumably thinking about getting in this race. So he's got like numbers and donations and all that to back that up. Rick Jackson's main argument, like if you go to the very, there's lots of things going back and forth and mudslinging about what his gas stations sell and all this, but the very core of it is that Burt Jones is sort of expected to be this guy, like that he's had everything given to him. He's the son of this billionaire gas and petroleum industry leader in Georgia, and that he's never had to really work for something, and that Rick Jackson's not going to let him just waltz into this office. It would look like it was going to be a coronation, and here comes Rick Jackson. And I think there's a part of him that's pissed off about that. This, you know, that Burt wasn't working for it in the same way that that not just Rick Jackson, but other Republicans were worried about. I was getting texts and, you know, all the off the record stuff that we as reporters get all throughout last year saying, when's he going to go on the campaign trail? When's he going to do this and that? Rick Jackson's kind of punched him in the mouth and forced him to go and step up his own campaign right now. So there's this one ad where Rick Jackson talks about, like, you know, eating Cheetos in the basement or something to that effect. And most of Georgia Republican insiders think he's talking about Burt Jones just kind of being lazy about this. And certainly Burt Jones isn't being lazy now. He's on the campaign trail all the time. But I think that goes to the heart of it. That Rick Jackson's had to fight and work for everything. He's a foster care kid with an abusive mom. He talks about that a lot in his campaign ads and on the trail. And he's built himself into this $3 billion guy who's putting at least a fraction of that into this race. But he's had a fight for it. And I think there's a part of him that's mad that Burt Jones hasn't. And here he is with Trump's endorsement on the eve of this primary.
Any chance that Trump switches his endorsement if it looks like Burt Jones isn't cutting it?
I don't think there's a chance of that. Watch that happen and then me have to eat my words. But I think more that there's always this chance that either Trump doubles up and says, I like both of them. Or I think more likely Trump stays behind Burt Jones, but might say some nice things about Rick Jackson, or might say nothing negative about Rick Jackson at all. And I think for Rick Jackson, that's a win. His team sees that a win. As long as Trump doesn't go out there and say that guy is a phony, he's a never Trumper, they'll take that any day.
Well, as an OG never Trumper, I've never seen Jackson at the meetings. So I think it's probably fake news.
He might use that for his next campaign ad. Watch out.
Don't put me in an ad. All right. So I want to switch gears, though, and talk about the Democratic primary for governor. We've got former Atlanta mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. She looks like she's going to win the nomination eventually, though she may end up in a June runoff with one of three different people. One is Jason Estevez, who is a progressive state legislator. Michael Thurmond, a former DeKalb County CEO who ran for U.S. Senate in 2010. Or Jeff Duncan, my guy Jeff Duncan. Speaking of never Trumpers, who served as lieutenant governor for one term as a Republican and who is now running as a Democrat. So it's interesting. I know a little bit Keisha Lance Bottoms. She and I taught IOP at the Institute of Politics in Chicago at the same times. She's clearly in the lead, but there also wasn't like a ton of enthusiasm for her in these groups that we talked to. So let's listen.
I don't think she's winnable.
I don't have any issues with her, but, you know, Stacey's my Spelman sister. If she couldn't be governor, can't no sister be governor. That's all I want to say.
One of my big concerns about Keisha Lance Bottoms is that she will bring Ossoff down. And because she'll be at the top of the ticket.
I don't have as much experience with Keisha and the other candidates as everybody else does, but just knowing what I have of her, I was in Atlanta maybe the last 2 years of her mayoral residency. I just don't see her. I see her as a good candidate, but just not as one that would be able to appeal to the masses when it comes to getting any Republican votes or Black male votes. I just don't know how that would go. I'm a little uneasy about it.
She's pretty similar as Kamala Harris as far as a Democrat, and where you heard them doing conversations like at barbershops where they did, a lot of Black men just did not vote for her because she was a female.
A lot of my friends, my neighbor has Jason sign in their yard. And so he's just been doing a lot more campaigning on the ground. And it's just a presence I haven't seen from Keisha. she had so many like wrong time things happen during her candidacy. And I just feel like the press and the, you know, what people took of her time was not overall positive. You know, she served one term and then we saw her go and serve in DC and work on Biden's, you know, administration. And then so people felt like there was a sense of abandonment and seeking for larger opportunities. So there's that feel, I feel like, locally around her perception here. I just feel like she got just a bad draw of the stick.
It seems like she's very concerned with being a pundit and being a personality on MSNBC and CNN, as opposed to being a representative for Atlanta. Again, I'm not a native of Atlanta, but I do know that there is a sense of pride in the city when it comes to the natives. And when it comes to Keisha, I find that most, if not half, the city is usually on the fence as to whether or not she's truly for them or not.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
So what do you think the upsides and downsides are of nominating Keisha Lance Bottoms? Because I will say, listening to voters all the time, comparing her to Kamala, kind of a negative there in Georgia. And what I heard is actually quite similar to Kamala, what I hear in focus groups, which is just the meh of it. So tell me what you think and hear about her.
Yeah, well, first, Georgia Democrats have been dominated by Stacey Abrams, right? Ossoff and Warnock, of course, two are statewide stars in the party. But Abrams has just been the candidate for governor for the previous two terms. So this is like the first time where Democrats have a real giant open race after she decided not to run a third time and other bigger name candidates decided not to run. Like Jason Carter, the grandson of Jimmy Carter, says he's not running. Lucy McBath, who I mentioned earlier, flipping that suburban seat, she's not running. So Keisha Lance Bottoms is always looked at as the sort of front runner in this race, and the polls bear that out. But you can hear the concerns about electability, right, over and over again. And there's negatives and positives with her. Of course, the positives are she's got city experience and the biggest bastion of blue votes in Georgia, Metro Atlanta. She worked for Joe Biden, part of his inner circle.
Is that good or bad?
Yeah, I mean, to some true blue Democrats, it's still a great thing. Her endorsement, she got his endorsement just a few days ago, and that sent out ripple effects across the Democratic world. But of course, there's the downfalls of both of that. She led Atlanta during a really tumultuous time, the pandemic and the protests for racial equality, and there were a lot of folks who said that she was sleeping on the job, that she was asleep at the wheel, that she wasn't this constant, steady presence in the city. At a time where you really demanded it. She, of course, you know, pushes back on that. But there was the tragic murder of an 8-year-old girl at one of these sites in South Atlanta that really became a zone of lawlessness on her watch that has come up in a major way on the campaign and will continue to come up. If she's the nominee, Republicans will bring that up too. And then, of course, there's her decision not to run for a second term. She became the first Atlanta mayor in modern history not to seek a second term. So she was branded a quitter by a lot of folks. And it really surprised people here in Atlanta. I mean, there were some signs looking back, breadcrumbs that she might not have run. But if she can't run for a second term, how can she go and serve as Georgia governor for an even bigger job and do it for 8 years? Because whoever wins, you know, Democrats are going to hope that they run again. So those are some of the drawbacks. But, you know, she hasn't caught fire yet. She's certainly the front runner in Democrats, but I look back to 2018 and like there's no Stacey Abrams like figure in this contest that just became like a national star. And that might be partly by design, right? Because that played against Stacey Abrams too, becoming this national figure. Republicans, you know, every Republican in Georgia, even folks running for probate judge and dog catcher were running against Stacey Abrams. So Keisha Lance Bottoms doesn't have those negatives yet, and maybe she won't. But you're already seeing Republicans try to run against her. Rick Jackson, Burt Jones, Brad Raffensperger, they're all invoking her right now. And there's an outside chance she can win this thing without a runoff, but more likely it looks like, you know, one of those three opponents. And neither of them has emerged as the consensus alternative yet, at least in the polling and probably in your focus group. There's not one sort of favorite, but they're all arguing that there could be the more electable Democrat come November.
Yeah, I mean, Estevez, Thurman, and Duncan are all hovering around like the 10% mark in the polling, and she may very well break 50% and avoid the runoff, but she might not. And I do want to dig, just this is, again, never Trumper privilege here. I want to dig in deeper on the Jeff Duncan of it all, because this is an interesting thing, right? I want to know how, I really wanted to know from these Georgia groups how they felt about a former Republican running as a Democrat in one of their primaries. So let's listen.
My first choice was Jeff Duncan, only because he took a moral stand. He showed his character. And as I said at the very beginning, we don't have a lot of people doing that, standing up for what's right. And he stood up against very powerful people, and he lost prestige in his office because of it. He couldn't run for re-election.
I'm open to learning more about him as a candidate. I try not to go for the popular kids, as is Keisha. You know, I know what I do know about her, but I do want to give another candidate a chance. I think this vote and our next are really important. And having a candidate that's not only strong in the primaries, but that can go ahead for the big election and win that is very important. But this is a person that's going to be representing the state and a whole lot of policies that people are keeping their eyes on Georgia for.
It's not that I dislike him or anything, but I do appreciate the fact that he did stand up to Trump and their illegal behavior. But my worries is that, like so many others, they'll go back home to the Republican Party. And we put him in office. Will he change back over to who he was before? But if it comes down to the general election, it's him for the Democratic Party. I will vote for him.
You know, some people are just turned off by race. So people in South Georgia might forgive him for the fact that now he's a Democrat, because a lot of people are suffering, especially in South Georgia, you know, economically. So those who may have been prejudiced may still vote Democrat. So I'm looking for somebody who can win. And so I think he has a good chance that he could cross both sides, because a lot of Republicans are frustrated too.
I have a bunch of questions about Duncan.
He's so fascinating, isn't he?
Again, I know him a little bit as well. He's at a lot of the same stuff that I am. He is at the Never Trump. He was at the Never Trump meetings. He is like a real conservative guy. Like, he really was, who was trying to run as a Democrat. And it was interesting to me to hear people say that they worry he's going to go back to that. Like, they can't quite trust him. Because I would say there's a lot of Democrats over the last 10 years who have viewed Never Trumpers as like good allies in the anti-Trump fight, but like, you guys are not, nobody's like, oh, you guys aren't real Democrats who are going to actually, you know, care about the same issues. And this was like a pro-life guy. So how is he being received by Democrats in Georgia?
Yeah, there's a lot of Democrats who want those Never Trumpers to vote for Democrats, but not to run for office, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think that's a decent way to kind of paraphrase it. Jeff Duncan's this fascinating figure, because I've known him since he was a backbench Republican state lawmaker who was super conservative. He ran with Trump's endorsement, right? Won office, did all the things you'd think the Republican lieutenant governor would do, a mainstream Republican lieutenant governor would do. And then 2020 happened, and it started slowly, his transformation. I got to basically chronicle it. You know, he'd start picking fights with Republicans a little bit more and more and more, and then kind of go whole hog to the point where he got exiled from the Republican Party, threatened with criminal trespass if he attended any state Republican events. And then he spoke at the DNC, and then he switched parties formally like a year ago. A lot of the concerns about him are basically two buckets. One is that he's a Trojan horse, that, you know, that he's saying all these things and he'll kind of go back on his word, like we heard. The other is not even that he's a Trojan horse. It's just that he did all these things that are like completely contrary to all the Democratic principles right now, right? He supported abortion limits. He opposed Medicaid expansion. He supported expansions of gun rights. He supported conservative evangelical based, you know, religious liberty type bills. And I mean, the list goes on and on. And yet now he's basically saying I was wrong on all those things, right? All those things he says he was wrong on. And if you go to any of his campaign events, that's the sort of a central, it's almost like an apology tour. I was wrong about this. I was wrong about that. And here's what I'll do. I'll rectify that. And there are a lot of Democrats who want those types of folks to start voting with them, but don't believe that they should be the ones holding the party banner. And he's about tied with his other two rivals, not named Keisha Lance Bottoms, in all the polls. And the reason why he still has significant support is because there are a lot of Democrats, like we heard, who just say, hey, he's the one who can best win statewide because he's done it before recently. You know, he did it back in 2018. So if he's done it before, he's the one who can band together that coalition of independent voters and core Democrats. And they see him as an effective alternate to Keisha Lance Bottoms. But whether he'll get enough of that support to actually make it to a runoff and turn this into a real, real deep divide, I mean, that would be a staunch contrast between him and Keisha Lance Bottoms. That's the big question. I think that's one of the many questions in Tuesday's primary, but that might be the one I'm watching most closely.
If somebody does get into a runoff with Keisha Lance Bottoms, do you think it's him or do you think it would be one of these other two guys?
Yeah, I mean, Estevez is coming on strong as well. His folks feel like he's peaking when he needs to be. And Michael Thurman has always been about the 10% point. Like he hasn't really moved that much in our polls, but he's always been at least a smidgen higher than the other guys. And, you know, he's won statewide too before, but that was decades ago. He's been a force. I mean, one of the best things going for him is, of course, like he's a magnetic speaker. He's very dynamic, but also the fact that his base is DeKalb County, which is the most important Democratic stronghold in Georgia. He's won countywide office there multiple times. So if DeKalb County comes out big for him, he's in.
I guess we will see, but we will be watching. I'm excited for this Georgia primary. There's a lot. There's actually a lot on the line, ultimately. So, Greg Bluestein, thank you so much for joining us. I love talking to you. It's one of my favorites. I think Georgia is such a fascinating state, and you know more about it than anybody. I don't know. Would you have anything you want to promote to the audience? Because everybody should be following you.
Yeah, Politically Georgia is a podcast that I co-host. It's every single day, Politically Georgia. You can find it on anywhere you stream podcasts. It's all about Georgia politics. And follow us on social media, AJC.com. And I'm Bluestein on Twitter and some variation of that on Blue Sky and Substack and all the rest.
I follow you all the time. All right. So thanks to you and thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group podcast. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, subscribe, go to bulwarkplus.com, subscribe. We just crossed 1 million subscribers at the Bulwark. And so we are very happy about that. If you're not one of them, become one of them today. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.